5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Gosh, by golly, it's time for mistletoe and holly. Tasty pheasants, Christmas presents, countryside's covered with snow. Oh, by gosh, by jingle, it's time for carols and Kris Kringle. Over evening, merry greeting from relatives you don't know. Then comes that big night, giving the tree the trim. You'll hear voices by starlight singing a Yuletide hymn. Oh, by gosh, by golly, it's time for mistletoe and holly. Fancy ties and granny's pies and folks stealing a kiss or two as they whisper Merry Christmas to you.
Then comes that big night, giving the tree the trim.
By golly, it's time for mistletoe and holly. Fancy ties and granny's pies and folks stealing a kiss or two as they whisper Merry Christmas to you.
The all-new Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is, it is the new Panic Room episode 123, which is kind of jolly. And, I had to give in. I had to concede and play some bloody Christmas music. And I don't like Christmas music, to be honest. I just hate it. So, bit of Frank Sinatra, though, so it makes it palatable for me. So there was that. So, she's not been well this week, God bless her. God bless her. Thoughts and prayers, Xtina, but she's struggling on. So we're going to bring her on. And it wouldn't be the same. It's not quite festive, but we've got to play it. know you're not very well, but how are you this evening other than that?
I am good. Every time you were about to introduce me, I was scared that I was going to like start a coughing fit. So I'm really glad that I didn't. So. I know.
Well done. Well, thank you for joining. I know you're almost literally phoning in from your sick bed there. So there's that. So but other than yeah, that's it. That's been your week. You've just been poorly all week.
I have.
Really?
I've been sick all
that's
week.
Been it.
Today is the fifth day, and I'm feeling a little bit better. But instead of wine tonight, it's NyQuil. So if I doze off, it's not because I'm drunk. Well, it kind of is, I guess.
I remember trying that years and years and years ago. I remember one night I had sort of one dose and it did no good. So I'll have a couple. I'll swig a bit back, and it knocked me right. I woke up about lunchtime the next day, and I felt hungover and groggy for like. At least till sort of tea time. It's like, what? What is in that stuff? It's good.
You've seen the joke about what, you know, if they don't want you to abuse the cough medicine, why do they give it to you in a little shot glass, you know? And
exactly,
it's great. I don't need wine tonight. I'm good.
No, good. Good. It is jolly stuff. It is jolly.
It is.
Yeah, but I must admit, I had a bit of a, I mean, the kids had it, I think the little one brought it home, and then the other one got it, and then I got it, and I luckily managed to not really get it bad, you know. I felt groggy for a couple of days, but sort of came out the other end. My boy had a day off school with it. But they both managed to swing a day off school with it, but you never know with them though, you know, whether they're just really, are they that bad? Are they, you know, it's like, you know, my son, 1 minute, I can't get out of bed. The minute I've said you can have the day off and I've dropped an email to the school, he's on his PlayStation.
Yes, definitely.
You know, he's suddenly, and my daughter's the same, you know, the minute, you know, the school bus has been and gone. And she got the dough. She's pinging off the bloody walls. You know, she's like.
You know, my mom made me stay in bed though. I had to stay in bed. I could read, and that was about it. I didn't have a TV in my room or anything, so I had to stay in bed if I, you know, didn't go to school because I
That's
was
it.
Sick.
Yeah.
But, you know,
if you're ill, you're ill. You know.
My kid was sick about two, three weeks ago. And I never got it. And I was like, yay, I didn't get it. And so I don't even know what happened this time. Nobody is sick in the house. I don't know why I am. And hopefully I don't give it to anybody else. But it's miserable. I thought I was dying for at least 3 days. The fourth day was and the fifth day was, you know, a little bit better.
Well, I must admit, you have milked it all week, I have to say. I found that. You know, you've done nothing. You've achieved nothing. You know, on the other hand, I've been growing my beard, so you know that's
There's
kept
that.
Me busy
yeah.
all week. You know
yeah.
that has
I
been.
Have
it's
that.
Coming on really well. My daughter, I look like a cross between a mole Santa and a hobo, so I must be doing really well. That's something to aspire to, isn't it? Well, he's at that point now where you know. I was going to shave it off. Let's just run with it. But
yeah.
I think I look sort of cuddly. I think cuddly.
Didn't you? I think you did this last year too. Yeah, and I don't think I got a picture or anything. And I'm thinking we need one to post on the page. You know,
I shall have to tell you. I will do. I will take a selfie with the beard, and we can put it up on the Facebook page. Yeah, because I remember the first time I sort of really went all out was I started. It was like June. And so it got into July, and it was just that bloody hot. It was just like so uncomfortable. I had to shut. But this is beard weather, I find.
It is.
So there's that, you know. But you know, it's a fun thing to do. You know, it's my life has come to this, ladies and gentlemen. That the highlight of my week is having grown a bit of a beard, got my beard a bit, you know, and it's, but hey, anyway, I've got to do this.
Oh, hey. looks like it's time to review something. Oh no.
So yeah, hey, I mean, I have to share. So I've been watching, and this is a bit of a departure from our usual sort of theme. I've been watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and it is absolutely phenomenal. Watch it. It's an Amazon Prime.
What is it? I don't even know what it is.
It's set in the late 50s. It's about a Jewish housewife who her husband leaves her, and she becomes a stand-up comedian. And but it's there's some great music. Imagine that the music, the soundtrack to it is fantastic. It's funny. It's not. It's sort of a dramedy. There's funny, but it's incredibly well written. The stand-up routines in it are fantastic. Obviously a guy playing Lenny Bruce. So Lenny Bruce features in it. It is, and funny enough, the sort of supporting actress is Alex Borstein, who plays the voice of Lois Griffin in Family Guy.
Yeah.
And she's so short. I didn't realize that woman was so tiny. But it's on Amazon Prime. It'd be worth getting Amazon Prime just for this show. I've just seen episode two, season two. And it's brilliant. It is absolutely fantastic. So watch it. If you're looking for something, we were talking about sitcoms before we came on air, looking at something that is worthy of watching, that is sort of funny, okay, but drama as well, then watch it. It's fantastic.
I have been watching The Handmaid's Tale. I've been watching that.
What do you think?
I'm loving it. It's really good. It's really good. I say it's really, really, really good, but it's not easy. Some of the scenes aren't really easy to watch, but I'm really enjoying it.
I've said before, I didn't watch it purposefully because I thought it was a period drama. There you go, judging a book by its cover, Jimbo. But it is, again, it was great. I think they've two seasons, three seasons so far. And yeah, it was, I thoroughly enjoyed, I actually binge watched that. I haven't really binge watched since Breaking Bad. Now, again, brilliant, brilliantly written. I mean, those of us that write can appreciate good writing. And there's a lot of stuff out there that is not well written, that is sloppy, especially comedies. I mean, so we were talking about comedy before we came on air, and they just go for, you can see the jokes coming a mile away, and when they finally get there,
and they're not even
funny. No.
Yes, no, they're not even funny. No, that's the bad part. Yeah. And I like to laugh. I really do. I love a good comedy, something really funny.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to think of the last really good laugh out loud comedy. Let me say the Big Bang Theory sort of lost it. It's humor. I was always been a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but the last season, which was just finished, was nowhere near as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
I used to love that show. It was still better than a lot. It was just not. It was not. But speaking of fun and games and exciting things, because the comedy's always fresh on this show, I feel, in many ways. What do tell? What have we got on the show this evening, Xtina? Do you have any idea? You do know?
I do know. We have Adam Burnett, and we have William Spacey.
Woo,
and, yeah, I'm excited. I am. Because I think they're both, what would you say, fun and games? There we go. They're fun and games. So we need fun and games tonight because we need fun and games.
This is our sort of Christmas parties. It's like the office Christmas party.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, when you're self-employed is a bit shit, because it's just like,
it's just you.
But we do our sort of on-air and virtual and what have you. We'll have to have this is our virtual Christmas party, so one of us needs to get drunk and one of us needs to throw up on sort of the CEO. That'll be fun. That'll be fun. Yeah, and I have to say, in my previous careers, and I worked for some big companies, I've seen careers destroyed at Christmas parties.
Oh,
absolutely.
Wow. Yeah.
I remember one, there was a guy, usually a mad-mannered guy, but he'd had too much to drink, and he got the sales director, literally him in a corner, telling him, he's giving his peace of mind to that. We never saw that. I never came back after Christmas break. We never saw him again. So, just, you know, happy days.
I have to say, for a Christmas party, I'm not even dressed for the occasion. I'm not. If I had thought about it, I would have worn, you know, my ball gown. But I'm in, you know, fluffy socks and sweats right now because I don't feel good. So that's what you get.
Well,
today.
To be fair, I'm just in a scruffy t-shirt and my Minions sort of pajama bottoms. So that's me. No underwear. Ladies, so it's got all the ladies excited. So some beardy Yorkshireman with no underwear on. This is just gets worse by the minute, doesn't it? Anywho. So I think on that high note, we should bring our first guest on, if you would care to announce him.
Our first guest is horror author Adam Burnett.
Adam, are you there, sir?
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
We can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. How you doing?
Brilliant. Then we can hear each other, which is kind of the point, really. So, no, we're doing well. How are you? Thank you for joining us this evening. You're welcome. So, Adam, I know we have corresponded over the past year, I would think, over the project. And it's always nice. It's always a treat for me to actually get to speak to some of our authors. And Adam is here to talk to about the project, which was released a couple of months ago. Was it a couple of months ago now? Was it maybe longer than
around
that?
November.
It was, yeah. A brilliant, brilliant book. I'm not going to... Spoiler alert. Tell us a bit more about it, Adam.
What would you like to know?
Just tell our listener what it's about. And, yeah, let's start there, shall we?
Let's start with... It starts in the 80s. I think it's a lot about the 80s and things... I think the idea of things coming back to you, things you did in your past that maybe you, at the time you didn't think were such a big deal, but somehow they've come back to you years later after you've become a different person and things have changed, but how do you deal with things you did before, you know?
Uh-huh. So why the 80s? Is it specifically a time period that's close to your heart, or just because?
It is. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, I guess, but I think it's also, like, a lot of it was nowadays, I think people nowadays have to deal with or have to think about, everything's being recorded, everything's photographed nowadays. But back then, nobody expected that anybody was getting filmed or anybody was getting recorded in any way. So,
which is just as well. I think when I think back to some of the stuff I got involved in, I'm sort of a child of, I guess, the 70s and 80s, so sort of a decade before. Some of the stuff we got involved in, and we got up to, geez, if that was all over the internet, that would be terrible.
Exactly. Right?
I shudder to think.
Yeah, exactly, right? I think this is how it came up with the idea. It was like, I don't think I'd ever did anything morally reprehensible, but I'm sure I did some bad things back in the day that I would not want people to see or to hear about nowadays, you know? And that was the crux of the novel, was like, what if, you know, somebody was actually videotaping me 25 years ago and I did some bad things, and I'm now I'm a good person, and I'm an upstanding citizen, and all this kind of you know. But how do I deal with that? You know, how do I, you know, what would you do if you're actually, if you've actually been repentant and become a better person? You know, dealing with bad things you might have done in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I ever became a better person, to be honest. I'm the same rotten person that I was 30 years ago, rather sadly. But, you know, hey-ho. Hey-ho, these things happen.
You've got me hooked at 80s. I'm thinking of the, you know, the 80s hair and the acid wash jeans, and that was just a cool time. It was. The 80s were great. And
No. The 70s, seriously. Seriously. I mean, the thing about the 80s, it was. I mean, bearing in mind, I mean, I live in Houston, which is still stuck in 1985, to be honest with you. The 70s, I mean, literally, they have the big hair, the shoulder pits. It's like walking into a John Hughes movie. It's like, really?
Yeah.
The 70s, I mean, you know, when you think, you know, the 70s rode in on the back, obviously, musically speaking, of the Beatles, straight into glam rock, the glam rock thing. Disco sort of happened around the middle of it, and then obviously the punk, which then led on into the 80s. Again, if you measure by music, you know, by the arts, the 70s was incredibly liberating. You know, it was, but like you say, it depends when you, I mean, for me, the 80s was, you know, I graduated and I was working, and it was all, you know, when you become an adult and all, you know, life turns a bit shitty, really. And I now find myself my conversation with my children. I mean, my son is 16, and he's I can't wait to leave school and get a job. And I said, no, seriously, enjoy this.
Yeah.
And this is what my parents used to say to me, and you'd scoff, and you know, best years of your life, Dad. And I said, look, being a grown up it sucks. It's awful. You know, you work yourself to death to feed your kids who are ungrateful. Can't wait to grow up and leave home, and then you die, and that's pretty much being a grown up. So I'm depressed now.
I know, right? And when you're a kid, you want to eat cereal for breakfast, and then when you get older and you eat cereal for breakfast, it's because, not for breakfast, for dinner. And you do it when you get older, and you just do it because, you know, that's all you have, or, you know, that's all you have time for. And it's
or you,
not
you can't
the same.
Be asked
that
to cook.
Fun. Yes,
I do
yes,
that.
Exactly.
I'll sit there and I think I'm hungry. I've had a long day. I'll have cornflakes. And then it's even worse because, I mean, for some reason I get our groceries delivered because I'm just too bloody lazy to go fetch it now. And they sent generic cornflakes. And I don't know if you've ever eaten generic. I mean, I grew up on Kellogg's cornflakes, bit of a cornflake snob. And as Kellogg's used to say in their ads, they do not make cornflakes for anyone else. Generic cornflakes are made in the pit of hell. They really are. They are terrible, terrible things.
Generic cornflakes, yeah.
Mm. Horrible. But I actually had a bowl of generic cornflakes for my dinner and then sort of went to bed. And it was like, this is like the world's saddest thing. It really is. It's just so sad.
I'll be sure to keep away from that. You know what's, the generic Cocoa Pebbles are actually really good. Maybe it's Cocoa Krispies, I think. It's Cocoa Krispies, but they are really, really good. You know,
Cocoa Krispies, they are so chocolatey, they turn the milk brown.
Yes, that's the good part. Yes, and then you drink chocolate milk afterwards. It's perfect.
Mm. So, Adam, I mean, I've got to ask, why do you gravitate towards horror?
I don't know. I like horror. It was never a huge thing. I just think it was just, I read a lot of Stephen King growing up, and I watched a lot of horror movies and stuff. I'm not a huge, I'm not obsessed with horror fan, but, I don't know if I like, it's horror. It's more, I like dark things, you know, dark. I like to get into the nitty gritty of people's lives and the things they don't like to talk about at parties. You know, I like that. It's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say horror. I don't want to write, you know, about werewolves and stuff like that. But I do like a darker aspect of humanity, you know.
I love werewolves. I love the monsters and all the rest of it. But for me, I'm with you. You know, some of the most terrifying things are the people. You know, the darkness of the human spirit.
Yeah.
You know, serial killers and et cetera, et cetera. I mean,
yes,
you fight a lot of horror writers, me included. I know Xtina as well. You know, specifically fascinated with serial killers, with the, you know, the psyche of the serial killer, because I guess that's the ultimate in darkness, really. But we do. We write about, some of the favorite things I've written have been more about the darkness in people than monsters.
Yeah.
And obviously the project is very much along the lines of the darkness within, you know, humanity, if you like, within people.
Yes.
People
don't necessarily dark initially, but they become dark, you know, because of their reactions to what's going on around them and stuff. They're not necessarily, they're not monsters, but maybe, I don't know, they become monsters. Or...
Well, I think, I mean, you know, you look at, I mean, Lord of the Flies, which was a great book, great two movies. I made two movies of that, shows how quickly you know, our socialized boundaries will crumble. In certain circumstances,
yes.
It doesn't take, you know, we are only ever, you know, we are only ever hop, skip and a jump away from total anarchy, to be honest, you know, as a species.
I totally agree.
Which is scary. And it doesn't take much for those individuals to, you know, trip over the line and end up, you know, going on a killing spree, etc. And we see it more and more these days.
Yeah. They're not bad people, right? They're not. Well, I don't know. Maybe they are, but I didn't go out to write bad people. They just were in bad circumstances who did bad things, you know.
It's one of those things. I mean, I read an interesting article a while ago. A correlation between frontal lobe damage, brain damage, and serial killer sociopathic tendency, and they looked at a whole bunch of serial killers and found that to be a commonality. There is a section in the frontal lobe of the brain, literally, that stops us from killing people, and if that's damaged or compromised in some way, or there's a chemical imbalance there, then that boundary just isn't there, and it's why, you know, said the sociopath can quite merrily kill people without it bothering them. They don't see the consequences. It's just something, just as everyday as eating or going to the lavatory or what have you. But it is. You know, and I know we had an author on, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, you know, and a common theme you see with obviously you read a lot of serial killer stuff, movies, fiction, but is that a lot of them sort of feel that what they're doing is work, or God's work, or something. They feel they're achieving something by killing people in a certain way, whatever. In fact, tragically enough, over in England, just this past week, there's a young lady who's been committed for life, I believe, into an institution, who was a loving, doting mom. She'd been through some troubles in her younger years, been through the whole drugs thing, etc. Found Jesus, got into the Bible and all the rest of it. Said angels told her to do it. She drowned her little girl. I think the little girl was three. Drowned her in the bath, and then burned the body as a sacrifice on a coffee table in the backyard. And that they have not convicted. That they found her not guilty of murder and manslaughter, but, you know, on the grounds of insanity. But she's been committed for, I guess, a hell of a long time. But it just makes you wonder, you know, if it's just a pure chemical imbalance or what is somebody like that. Like you say, I don't know, are they bad? Are they evil? Or is it just, you know, chemistry, just basic chemistry?
I don't know. I think in this book I tried to write it like it wasn't, I don't think anybody was imbalanced chemically or insane. It was just more a reaction. I think a lot of this book was about abuse, the people that have been abused and been really affected by bad things that had happened to them, and this was the way they would react to it, you know. This was their innate, they want revenge, you know, they want some kind of, the book you were talking about, is it Diary of a Serial Killer? Talking about?
Sorry, say again.
You said you had another writer on the show a few weeks ago, because I listened to another podcast you guys did with Diary of a Serial Killer. Is that the one you're talking about?
Oh, I know.
It sounded like a really interesting book.
Evolution of a Monster.
There we go.
Kyle Steffi, yes. It's a brilliant book. It's kind of disturbing how the author puts you in the head of the killer, but he actually worked in correct institutions and actually spoke to some of these people. So he had a unique perspective, and he gets into the killer's head. It is so everyday. That's what I, when I first read that, it was just not, it wasn't all dark and serious, you know, like Thomas Harrison.
Yeah.
It was da-di-da-di-da-di-da, I killed them, da-di-da-di. It was like, wow, it was just so brilliantly refreshing, you know, and it's disturbing. I mean, it's just, for me, that's what makes it the most disturbing of all. It's just like, it's like describing a walk through the park, you know, feeding the ducks and what have you. And it was brilliant, but
it was very interesting. I'm gonna get a copy of this book for sure, man. It sounded really interesting. It reminded me of actually you guys turned me on to this from your website. Ketchum. The girl next door. I've read a couple of his books recently in the last couple of weeks. I'd never heard of him before until I got onto your website, and I read Girl Next Door and Off Season, which I really like. I heard Off Season. I thought that was brilliant. Girl Next Door was a little bit too
brutal. Disturbing book. I mean, and it's based on a true story as well, which makes it all the more disturbing. If you get the chance to see the movie of The Girl Next Door, I mean, you know, it's a harrowing film to watch, but I would recommend it. It is a very, very good film.
Yeah.
It will stick with you. It will stick.
I'm
beautifully
sure,
written book.
It was a great written book. I'm really interested in this guy. He sounds he's a solid writer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Simple and straightforward, you know, like, which reminded me of this, what was his name? Jay Steffi?
Kyle Steffi.
I want to hear more. I want to hear more about the project. I think we have an audio clip for an excerpt.
We do have a clip. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Even though Xtina sent it, reminded me at the last minute that we had a clip. It's already in waiting. So she does this to me every time there's a clip. There was one time we were on air and she said, "We're on air." And she said, "We have a clip, don't we?" No, we don't. So. But yes, we do. Yes, I did. Oh, the magic happens here, folks. I will play the clip. Here we go.
John McGolney took his eyes off the envelope and stared into his kitchen. It was dark. Glowing lines cut through the shadows like an electric blade. The envelope lay lit on the counter. It was as a thing alive. John believed he could smell it. This man, this breathing man with breath like a wounded bull, felt sick, worried, and the need to vomit came on him like an accident. Jesus. His eyes tried to focus on the dark points of the kitchen. He tried to see, but the shadows could only come so close. He stared at the photos scattered pell-mell on the floor. Snippets of black and white at his feet. Dozens of 8x10s. His right leg weakened and his hand shot out to grip the counter. He tried to remember. That last time. That last goddamn time. Was it my hands or the hammer? He couldn't remember. Magnificent lines like fine plumes of smoke jigged across his vision, and he held the counter harder, held it like he was holding on to the last wisp of his sanity. For the second time, his stomach heaved, and this time there was no stopping it. Thick and viscous, it bubbled from his lips, soaked his shirt, landed with a plop on the linoleum floor. Right from his guts, it felt like it was his guts, like someone had taken a fine blade and cut a smile into his belly, letting loose the churning things inside. The yellow-gray viscera, the worming reds, the bruised purples. He vomited until there was nothing left, and then he vomited some more. A low moan came from somewhere deep within him, deeper than those roiling intestines and his tribal drum heart, deeper than his toes that he couldn't feel touching the floor, deeper than that, deeper than earth, rock, ash, and hell. It came from the deepest thing he knew. It came from his past. The photographs were spilled across the floor like a cut deck of cards gone awry. Half of them were still in the envelope, and there they would stay. John had seen enough. I need to look at the return address, he thought. But the idea of moving, of actually reaching out and touching that thing, made his hands shake. A gaseous burp escaped his lips. Satan is waiting. Without warning, his face crumpled, and hot tears strung his cheeks. How long since he had used that expression? How long since he had cried? The envelope, his eyes sought it out, and he had to squint off in the haze of cloud to see it properly. His name, his address, written in letters so uniform they could have been a typeface. No return. Then his gaze drifted, and he realized that there were no stamps either. No postage. Whoever sent this envelope had brought it to his house.
Awesome. Awesome. Was that you reading, Adam?
That was me reading, yeah.
Wow. Wow, it sounded, you should read the whole thing. That sounded brilliant.
I've read it many times.
Yeah, for the audio, but funnily enough, actually, we're just about to embark on getting it made into an audio book, and we found our reader. You can read your own book. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
There you go.
The slightly, you know, whisper breathing thing is, I had chills. Maybe that's the NyQuil, but I'm thinking it was just kind of creepy. So that's great. It's awesome. Yeah. No, definitely.
Perfect.
You should try out. I might pick you. Yeah.
Creepy is what I was aiming for.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, talking to you right now, you don't sound creepy, which I guess that's good. But reading
that's
it definitely.
Good,
yeah. Right. That was awesome.
Thank you.
We don't have creepy people on this show. Not really.
Never.
We always have fun people. Damn it.
Mm. Yeah.
Just people, just humans, right? Everybody's living the dream.
Oh yeah. Living the dream.
No, we say no creepy, but yeah, when I do the 11 questions and I ask that one question about, you know, would you ever eat human flesh? I have to admit, I'm a little worried about the answer sometimes from our horror authors, because we have so many of them. They're like, you know, I it doesn't matter if it's legal or not. I would anyway. And I'm like, no, it's just scary.
Well, I think in the interest of experience, you know, I would quite merrily eat human flesh. I just to say I've eaten it, to be honest with you.
I would eat human flesh. I don't know if I do it merrily. I'm sorry. I do it. Merrily might not be my...
I would I would fire up the grill, grill some onions, bit of kosher salt and pepper on there. Brilliant. But, cracked peppercorns, all the rest of it. So it's a nice medium rare, so it's still juicy in the middle. Maybe there's some fries, baked potato.
Perfect.
Not that I've given it a lot of thought. Moving on. So, Adam, what is now? Are you working on something at the moment? What is next from you?
I've got a few books in the pipeline. I'm working on a book about this guy who's obsessed with Jaws, because I'm obsessed with Jaws. But it's not, well, I've had a lifelong obsession with the movie and the book, Jaws.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Why?
About 4 years old, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I remember going to see that at the movies when it came out many, many, many years ago. But why? I mean, do you like sharks? Or what is it about the movie and the book that's so entranced you?
I think few perfect films out there, and I think it's one of them. And it's just something, I don't know, the unknown, the darkness of it, I guess. I don't know, the sharks, I always liked sharks, but I don't know, since I was about 4 years old, I always loved sharks. I think I saw the movie when I was a kid, and then we went to the beach, and I was like, let's go swimming, and yeah, I've always enjoyed sharks. I like the big Spielberg fan, and I don't know what it is. I've always been obsessed with it. I've seen this movie 100 times at least, and I do like horror films. To me, it's like the ultimate horror film, because they never really, they don't show the killer so much,
I agree. I mean, it's like you say, that there's probably a mere handful of perfect films. Obviously, Jaws. I think Alien has probably got to be on the list as well.
Back
to the Future was an absolute.
Back to the Future is absolutely up there.
You
man.
Couldn't
China
imagine them
up there too. Yeah.
Yeah. You couldn't imagine. I think Silence of the Lambs has got to be on that list as well. I mean, that was
pretty solid.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Like you say,
that's
there's
my
not.
My wife's favorite film, man.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I mean, I enjoy shark movies. I mean, I just sat and watched, was it 43 Meters Down? Which was pretty good. But again, it's I think any shark film, whether it Deep Blue Sea or whatever, etc., is only ever going to be, you're always going to compare it with Jaws, and it's never going to be
course,
the same.
Of course.
Never.
That's the sign of a perfect film. You can't escape Jaws. Like,
yeah.
Whatever shark film, if there's a shark in it, it's not as good as Jaws, right? So
exactly, yeah. And I really, really, really hope that they do not remake it. I hope,
I don't
to
even,
dear
that,
God, they
please don't even
that.
Please
do not
don't.
Remake that film.
Don't repeat those words.
before I saw Jaws, I didn't get it. You know, I remember, because I just saw it, I don't even know, what was it, 6 months ago or something, James? He threatened to never talk to me again until I watched it. But I didn't get it. I was like, well, I get it now. But I mean, before I watched it, I was like, just don't go in the water. What's the problem? What is the big deal? But after watching it, I mean, I remember one part actually pulling my feet up underneath me, because I was so scared, and I wasn't in the water or anything, but I was terrified. So it was great. I loved it.
That's awesome. Yeah, exactly. I go swim in a lake. There's clearly no sharks. I still think about. I still have that. That's the mark of a great horror film. Nothing can compare to that.
I mean, it scared a whole generation. For going in, I mean, I'm nervous with water anyway. I'm a bit of a hydrophobe, but that sort of reinforced for me. Just don't go in there. Don't. I mean, look at being brought up in. We the beach for us was sort of Northern England, and between the cold temperature and the raw sewage that was in the sea at the time, there was no chance of getting bitten by anything other than maybe a used condom or something, but. we move here, funnily enough. I mean, we go.
Filmed in Northern England, or
they may well have been.
I think so.
But here, I mean, we go to the beach in Galveston, and they catch big sharks off the coast here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Not Northern England, New England. It was filmed. Bit of a difference.
But they cleared the water up. I think they get some of the bigger sharks around the coast of England. Because again, I read an article a while ago saying that people don't realise that these sharks, you know, they're pretty much everywhere. They are everywhere. They can, you know, and the majority of shark attacks on humans take place in around 3 feet of water, apparently.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go for a paddle, it's all over. It's all over.
Yeah. But, Australia is huge. Yeah.
Oh,
but it's
Australia,
right?
Yeah, I mean.
Something coming up from the unknown, like from the depth. That's horror, right? Like, that's, to me, that's.
Yeah, I think the whole. The whole shark thing is you're in an alien environment, which is obviously the sea, which is not an actual environment for a human being, and you're being eaten by a fish. You're being eaten alive by a fish. There's really nothing more horrific than that, I guess. But
not really. It's in pieces, one piece at a time, man. It's not a quick death, I don't think. So you have combined.
Well, here's the thing. The way sharks do it is they will come and, first of all, they'll circle you. Then they'll come and sort of bump against you just to get a feel for it. Then, because obviously they don't want to get injured by a dying prey animal, they will come and they'll take a bite and then swim off. And the idea is they will take that bite and leave you to bleed to death. And then when they know you're just about gone or gone, then they'll come and eat. So there you
That's
go.
That's the disturbing.
Right.
There you go.
Sound like a bear. They're going to go for your throat and that's it, right? That's, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
Well,
so you've got
I
all the fun of bleeding
this,
to death in the ocean.
I hate to say this, Adam, but it's about time for our to wrap up the first segment of our show. And I want to thank you for coming on, and you have to promise to come back and see us. Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, yes, no. Yay! And,
thank goodness for that. We'll do a Shark Week episode, and we'll just talk about sharks for an hour and a half. That'd be fantastic. There you go.
Okay, it's been great talking to you guys for sure.
Yeah,
thank you, Adam.
Just give us a plug. Where can we find you online, sir?
On Facebook or www.umbrellaphotography.com. That's my photography website. I'm also a photographer, so I don't know if I want my photography listening to my horror novels or something. But umbrellaphotography.ca. Or Facebook, Adam James Seth Burnett, and that's pretty much it, I think.
That's just the Hellbound Books website as well. You have a page on there, don't forget.
Of course, yeah.
There you go.
We always forget to mention that one, right?
They do, and I don't know, you know, we go to all the trouble to make you guys a nice web page.
You know what? It looks awesome. It honestly looks awesome. You guys did a revamp about 8 months ago or 10 months ago, and it looks awesome. It looks phenomenal.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for the plug. There we go. Right, check out the website, people. Okay, Adam, thank you so much for joining us, and we will look forward to having you on the show again very soon.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a good night,
Speak
guys.
See you soon.
Yeah.
And you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, I guess it's break time, so let's have a break. Hang on. I need to find the button, don't I? I should have it ready, shouldn't I? Talk amongst yourselves, people. I can't find this. Oh, here we go. Found it. Here we go.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba Pilgrim Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree, they won't mean a thing if you're not here with me. I'll have a blue Christmas, that's certain. And when that blue heartache starts hurting, you'll be doing all right with your Christmas of white. But I have a blue, blue Christmas.
Was for Adam.
I didn't know what was going on at first.
Xtina is trying to figure out what that was from. That was Jaws.
No,
I know. You've seen the film now. You've seen it now.
I knew what that was. I mean, at first I didn't, and it kind of freaked me out a little bit. But then when I realized what it was, I did the thing again where I pull up my feet a little bit, just to make sure that, you know,
yeah,
the shark is
amazing. And it's a you know, tribute to John Williams, who wrote the score. You know, that just that tune can instill fear. You know, it was just a brilliant.
Yeah.
Scary. Yeah. So, and it's funny. I mean, you know, we mentioned obviously shark. I mean, there's been so many shark, and I always watch shark movies. I've seen all the Sharknado movies. I have to say.
They're fun.
You know, it's if you see it as high camp comedy, it's fun. It's very tongue in cheek. Okay. It's self-referential, and they are just great fun. I mean, it just got so ridiculous. I mean, I think the last one they had time travel, which was kind of fun.
God.
But it just it was time traveling Sharknadoes in a shutting, and it was just like, this is great. This is brilliant, but I enjoyed it. But yeah, I mean, Jaws. I was just saying to Adam there. I mean, Jaws itself was, and a lot
what
of people.
Did you see that movie Meg? Or it was the Meg or whatever. Was that good?
Oh,
I heard it was good.
Yeah, we went to see that. It was all right, I suppose, for what it was. It had very little plot. There's a few Jaws references, which was kind of neat, but it was just no.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't horror. It wasn't comedy. It was just somewhere sort of in the middle of, you know, if you want an hour and a half to kill or whatever it was. We went to the movies to see it. Took them long to see it, and even she was bored.
Wow.
Even she was
okay.
Bored. A good one. The Shallows was good. And the, I can't remember if it was 43 or 34 meters down, which I just watched, which is not really a shark. There's a shark in it, but, which was okay. Deep Blue Sea was good, you know, if you like that sort of thing. It was, again, that was very sort of high camp stuff, but that kind of worked.
This isn't like a shark movie, but do you remember a movie called Dead Calm? Do you remember that? It was in the water. It was this, these people are like out to sea or something in their boat, and their boat is like sinking, I think. I can't remember.
Dead Calm was the Nicole Kidman one where they pick up a guy who was drifting.
Yeah.
That was a good movie. There was no sharks in that at all.
No, but it was water. It was water, so it was, you know, along the same.
It was in a boat. Yes, I'll give you that one. But again, was it Sam Neill and Nicole Kidman? But it was. It was because, you know, and obviously had a great twist to it. But that was good. That was a good movie as well. I'm very nervous. As soon as if something's set on a boat, I'm immediately on edge anyway. Because I don't do boats and water awfully well. So that's just like.
I'm already scared.
I mean, like the Love Boat, you know, the Love Boat used to frighten me because it was a boat. It's just a comment. No, they're on a boat. It could sink any moment. That's what boats do, you know. I've seen Titanic. I know what happens.
Right. I was going to say.
I know what happens. And they said that was unsinkable. So, ha.
They did. That was just. What are they remaking redoing the Titanic, the actual boat itself? Is that what I'm hearing? Like rebuilding the actual ship?
They rebuilt for the movie. James Cameron built, I think it was a two-thirds scale model of the actual ship, which is big. I mean, it was a big ship. But at the time, obviously, it was the biggest ship ever made. I was going to say the biggest ship afloat, but it wasn't really afloat for that long, was it? I don't know if they're going to. They may well do. But it's funny, I mean, you know, compared with, you know, some of the big cruise ships now, it would look like a little tugboat, you know? It looks small. But it may well be the sort of thing they would do. And people would. I don't know. Would you go on it, though?
Would you
go on a cruise on a remade Titanic?
No, I wouldn't.
No.
I would go on a normal cruise, but not that one. I think I don't know. I'm not going to say cursed or anything, but no, I don't think I would. I don't think I would. No.
Mm-hmm. No, just the name. If they called it something else, you know, like the Unsinkable,
right.
SS Unsinkable,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
The SS, we won't end up at the bottom of the Atlantic, you know, then maybe. Maybe
right.
So. Maybe
I
so.
Right there. Yep.
So, you know, cynicism aside. So, hey, speaking I was just saying, speaking of boats, but we're not really. So what's going on now? Any ideas?
I do have an idea. We have science fiction.
You should
know. I
know
science fiction. Oh my goodness.
Start again.
We have science fiction author William.
Science fiction author.
Oh my god! Would you stop it?
That's easy for you to say.
I'm going home now.
You are home. That's the point.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Who have we got coming up next, Xena? Do tell.
Okay, again, coming up next, we have science fiction author William Stacy. Woo! Woo!
Hopefully that's William. There you are. Hello, sir. Thank you for joining us. How are you this evening?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed listening to the first part of the podcast. You guys, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
It does sound like it, doesn't it? But to be honest, we're just miserable. But, you know, we put on a brave face. I feel.
By the
He's
way, James,
lying.
You are correct. It was Sam Neill in that movie that you're talking about, Dead Calm.
It was Sam Neill. Yeah. Who played the bad guy? I cannot remember who played the bad
Zane,
guy.
Something Zane. Same guy from...
Oh, Billy Zane.
Billy Zane.
Yeah.
Yes.
What are you with that guy? If you're ever on a boat and Billy Zane's on it, you just need to leave because
he's
just bad news.
He's
bad
a lot of
news.
Trouble.
Yeah, it was a good film. It was a very tight sort of thriller, wasn't it? I enjoyed that.
It was
that.
A wonderful
again, it was a boat, and that was back in the days. I used to have a big crush on Nicole Kidman. I think that was before she married Tom Cruise, I believe, and sort of. Spoiled herself for me a bit, you know.
I have the biggest crush on Nicole Kidman. You would not believe.
Yeah, you as well.
I always thought she was a little, like, you know, cold and reserved, and I didn't care for her too much. I didn't.
I may have bought Moulin Rouge twice.
Yeah. Yes, she wasn't. I remember that. Yeah. To be fair, I was. You know, I sat through Eyes Wide Shut, which was, 3 hours film, which was an awful film, but Nicole was in it, so it kind of made up for that for me. But what a dreadful film that was.
The Others was good, though. She was good in that, I thought, The Others. That was good.
The Others was a lot of fun, yeah, you're right.
I love that movie, yes. Yeah, that was a good one. So, William, you're here to talk to us about Ranger, book 3 of the Dark Elf War trilogy. There's no tagline on here. I don't think Xena's bothered to put a tagline on it, bless her. But she is poorly, so we'll give her we'll give her some leeway on that one. But so, tell us something about it.
Well, for a tagline, I would use the tagline for the entire series, which is basically Black Hawk Down meets the Lord of the Rings.
Ooh. Hey, you did tell me that. He spent that, so that's totally my bad because I had that somewhere. Mm-hmm. James,
written it down.
Not your fault. I sent it late.
That'd be better if William said it himself, you know, so I didn't tell you what it was.
Right.
So tell us more about it.
You mentioned that I'm a science fiction writer, and I, while that's correct, I would actually say that I'm more of a dark fantasy. I always thought that I was going to be a horror writer, quite often. That's what I originally set out to do, but my books just went in different directions. So I went more with fantasy, but it's always fantasy with a bit of a horror aspect. So My big fantasy trilogy, The Vampire Queen, is basically Vikings versus vampires, and my Black Monastery is Vikings versus a demon, and Ranger, third book to the Dark Elf War, is basically modern combat versus magic, because I just thought that would be really cool.
Oh, wow. So, I like that idea.
So there's some pretty dark stuff in a lot of my books, to be quite honest. I don't really like to play it safe with the clean fantasy or clean science fiction.
Mm-hmm. It has to. You have to have that. Is that? Are you inherently a dark person, or it's just something that interests you?
I just think it's more fun. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you want to take nice people and throw them into a horrific situation and just do bad things to them. That's just a whole lot of fun. Yeah, they're probably going to make it out of there alive. Probably, you know, these. It could happen. It's just more fun.
You say not in one of my books they wouldn't. They never make it out alive in my books.
Nobody makes it out alive?
Very rarely, to be honest. Very rarely. Mm.
Yeah, I've been accused of killing off an awful lot of people. but you know.
But isn't that's the fun part of the job, isn't it?
Get mad at him, don't they, George Martin?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah. He's not scared of killing people off.
Yeah, I don't think he's all that bad. I think he gets a bum rap. I don't think he's killed off everybody.
Well, I remember I've had people, you know, tell me, I really struggled. I never got into Game of Thrones. But people said to me, well, whatever, if you do get into it, don't get attached to any of the characters because, you know, they will kill off a main character and just when you least expect it. Which is great, you know. Again, that then because you know life's like that, and you know these things do happen.
He's very different from, say, J.R.R. Tolkien, in that you really need to worry about the main characters. There's nothing mm-hmm. sacred in his books, in
yeah.
particular series, and I think that's great. You know, he gets you to really yeah. like somebody, and you don't know what's going to happen to that character because so often in a fantasy novel. You're presented with the main characters, and you just know that it's going to be okay, and everything's going to work out, and they're all going to make it back.
Right.
And mm-hmm. you don't get those reassurances in his books. And I just think that's so cool. And I try to do the same thing in my own books. I want to make you worry, you know? You mm-hmm. really need to worry about characters, because not everybody's going to make it out alive.
Yeah.
No, that's good. Keep the reader on their toes, and I think you know a lot of people do play it safe. Which I'm with you. You know, I prefer you know a bit of uncertainty because I think it adds to it. It adds to it. I don't like to read safe, so I don't like to write safe either.
Yeah. I want to hear more about it, William. Do you have a reading for us in excerpt?
I do. Just one moment.
Yay.
So to set the mood, this is from the first chapter of the final book in the Dark Elf War trilogy. The first book was Starlight. The second book was Guns with a Z. And this one is Ranger. And each book has a different protagonist. Because like I just said, you know, sometimes the hero doesn't make it. But I'm not giving away anything on this one. So this is the very beginning of Ranger. Northern British Columbia, 6 years after the culling. Alex Benoit lay motionless in his hide, a one-foot-deep trench covered by a thermal shield tarp and fresh foliage, and peered through the two-inch slit at the kill zone 100 meters to his front. Two rifles sat within reach, a 5.56mm Special Operations Forces Combat Assault Rifle, a SCAR, and a new dart Excalibur air rifle. Also close at hand was the clacker, resembling an oversized industrial-strength stapler. Something with far too many legs crawled over the back of his hand, but he ignored the urge to brush it away, just as he had countless other times in countless other tactical hides. He and the other Rangers had set the ambush up late last night and had been lying near motionless for hours. It had been drizzling for some time now and would probably continue for hours yet, but the sky was turning gray with the coming dawn. He switched off his miniaturized night vision goggles, pushing them atop his forehead and letting his eyes adjust to the dim. Even the best night vision technology created a tunnel vision effect and made shooting difficult. As he scanned the terrain ahead of him, he absentmindedly rubbed his short beard. Their kill zone was a 50-meter length of what had once been BD Drive in Hudson's Hope, the main drag of the little northern British Columbia town. But the road was barely recognizable now. Vines and weeds choked the rusted-out remains of abandoned cars. Saplings had ripped their way through the asphalt, and years of winter freeze, a long broken water main, and neglect had completed the destruction. The wilderness had reclaimed Hudson's Hope almost entirely. Thick vines, grasping weeds, and sprouting trees grew over, under, and through the buildings, breaking glass and ripping apart walls, letting in the rain that wreaked further havoc, causing most of the homes to sink back into the earth, leaving little behind but broken shells now overgrown by brush. One building remained intact, though. At the far left of the kill zone sat the Hunter's Inn and Mini Mart, a brown brick complex that housed motel dwellings, a small grocery store, and a sporting goods shop that had once sold hunting supplies, preserved food in cans, warm clothing, sleeping bags, tools, and, most importantly for the remnants, guns and ammo. There had always been a surplus of hunting rifles in northern British Columbia, even after the Dark Elf massacre of Fort St. John. Without people, those weapons now sat rusting. The remnants may have been monsters, but they weren't stupid, especially the Dark Elves. They understood all too well what happened when their Bogart and Troll warriors went up against firearms with swords and spears. The Dark Elves always had their magic, of course, but only a handful of them were mages. In the last 6 years, they had learned how to survive in the wilderness of northern Canada, but to keep surviving, they needed the weapons, ammo, and supplies in that building, setting them up for the Rangers' ambush. As if by magic, a lion appeared on the street, right within Alex's arcs of fire. It stepped out from between two abandoned cars, its head held high as it sniffed the cold northern air. Alex held his breath as the lion, a female, he thought, turned to stare at him, her yellow eyes flashing in the pre-dawn light. She had to weigh hundreds of pounds of raw muscle. Another lion joined the first, another female, and then two more, all moving with remarkable grace. There was a pride in the area, he knew, at least a dozen adults with twice as many young, but the Rangers rarely saw them this closely. He never understood why the lions hadn't migrated further south, but he was glad he had left Larry, Curly, and Moe with the vehicles. The dogs were too loyal and brave for their own good sometimes. The first lioness was still staring right at him, and sweat rolled down Alex's face. His fingers drifted closer to his assault rifle, but the lioness looked away and then sniffed the ground. It was entirely possible she knew Alex and the others were watching them and just didn't care. In a world without people, lions were almost at the top of the food chain. And then all four lionesses froze, their heads held high. After several long seconds, they turned and bolted into the wilderness. Lions still feared something after all. The hellhounds were coming.
Awesome.
And you read it so good, too.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You practiced.
Yeah, that was good. It got me. I want to hear more of that.
Well,
yeah,
thank you very much.
Helps.
I appreciate that.
That was good. I like that the dogs are called Larry, Curly, and Moe. That was pretty neat.
Yeah, I usually sneak a dog into my books. I love dogs.
I'm a dog person.
You don't hear hellhounds that often in books anymore. I don't think anymore. You know, you have like the werewolves and your vampires and stuff, but hellhounds I think are underrated, and we don't hear enough about them. And
there should be more, shouldn't there?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
There are tons of hellhounds in these books, and they are nasty.
What is the difference between a hellhound and a werewolf? Then is are they different?
Well, in my book, a hellhound is a pony-sized devilish hyena that breathes fire.
Yikes.
And the Dark
cool.
Elves use them as their dog.
Of course we do.
I want one. I need one of those.
I based them.
Although,
on
I mean, in our house, our hellhound is our little chihuahua thing that pees all over the furniture. So,
yeah, we have a German Shepherd.
That.
She's a little bit bigger than a chihuahua.
Yeah, yeah, we have four. I mean, our biggest is a mastiff mix. He's the chihuahua's about as big as his head. But it's funny, the chihuahua is the only one of the other three, the other three we have that will actually stand up to the big dog. The other two are terrified of him, but the chihuahua will snap at him. It's funny. It's just like, and the dog, he just looks at him like, seriously? He just
right.
Yeah, I based the hellhounds in these books on an Irish mythological beast, and I'm probably going to mess up this pronunciation, but they were called Gwigli. Or Gwilgi, and I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. Gwilgi. But I like to take monsters from mythology and I like to adapt them and put them into the books. Because in the books, our stories of magic and monsters have a root in creatures that actually existed and then visited this world before, and now they're back. And that's the breakdown of the Dark Elf War. We kind of moved between worlds, and they followed us back.
Huh.
I like that. I mean, there are. So if you look back at some of the mythology stuff, I mean, there's a rich, you know, rich vein there to plunder. You know, some of the most, you know, exciting things were sort of dreamt of back in the Middle Ages, which is great. It's nice to see them coming back, I have to say. Makes a nice change from, you know, your werewolves and your sparkly vampires and all the stuff that they've got that's been going around recently. I think that's one of the reasons I like the Harry Potter stuff is obviously the Fantastic Beasts movies. You know, I just love all of that. You know, all the weird and wonderful stuff they come up with.
Yeah, it's not much fun with the sparkly vampires, is it? I've always thought that vampires should be monsters. I'm not taking anything away from the people that like it. You know, my wife loves those books. And Stephanie Meyer has done very well for herself. But it's not my thing.
No,
my vampires sleep under a mound of corpses, and it's really gross.
Yeah. Yeah. I sat through all of those movies with my young daughter. I mean, she loved them. I mean, you know, she was, what, 8 at the time. So I guess, yeah, they're spot on for 8-year-old girls. But it was like, seriously? No.
Yeah. Yeah, my daughter just watched Game of Thrones, actually. And you're not familiar with the series, correct?
No, I saw episode one and could not get into it.
You're familiar with it, right?
Yeah, I love Game of Thrones. I'm actually going to do a rewatch, you know, before the next season comes out next year. So yeah, definitely, I love it.
Right. My daughter is 16 years old, and I noticed that she was getting to the episode that's called the Reigns of Castamere with the Red Wedding.
So I stopped
what I was doing, and I went over to the couch, and I sat down with her, and she looked at me, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm going to watch this episode with you because nobody should have to watch this by themselves."
Right. Oh, my gosh. That's awesome that you did that. Yeah, that show was good. I love it. I do. And I was hooked. You know, James, you said you only watched one episode, and that was it. But, the first episode was what caught me, and for some reason, for me, it was the scenery. I thought it was beautiful. I did, and of course, you have the beheadings at the end of the first episode, and I was like, oh, wow! I mean, that was so cool to me. So I kept watching, and it was confusing for a while because there's so many, you know, different houses and different people, and I couldn't keep them all straight. But I powered through, and I absolutely loved it. I did. I can't wait for the next season.
You and me both, and it's pretty dark as well. That's some pretty dark fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, the smoke demon that crawls out of the Red Priestess's vagina. That's not nice television.
No. And then of course you have the incest going on. So I mean that's not great either.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I know.
Yeah, you're really selling this to me. I'm going to have to give it another go. Dragons in it and all that going on and boobs.
Yeah.
I'm told there's a lot of boobs in it.
What I would recommend that you do is I would Google Samuel Jackson 5-minute history of Game of Thrones, and he'll sell it to you far better than I ever could.
Oh, right. I will do that.
And there's a really hot lesbian scene in the first season. That the really hot lesbian scene with Daenerys and who is that? The chick that she's with. Oh my gosh, that was so hot. I was turned on. I was like, wow, this is super hot. And you know, they were like fully clothed, I think, but that was still a really hot scene. And I think I need to watch that again tonight.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah,
the
books inspired me.
In your condition.
In my own books.
Right.
So I may have to start. Well, it could be like The Handmaid's Tale, where I really didn't fancy that. And then once I got into it, I got into it. So maybe I should. I mean, for me, I think whether it's just a time or whatever, you know, if it doesn't grab me, it's like when Breaking Bad, within the first 5 minutes of the first show, I was hooked. And it was just, I binge watched that. I watched the whole lot within about 4 or 5 weeks, I think. I mean, it was like six seasons of it, and I just plowed the way through it.
To my shame, I haven't finished watching it all yet, but I really enjoyed what I did watch. There are too many shows out there to watch. I stopped and I got half-finished series everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem I have. That's why if it doesn't grab me straight away, you know, I'm not going to invest, you know, hours and hours and hours on something.
I have to say, for like horror shows, you know, I watched The Haunting of Hill House not too long ago, and I loved everything about that.
Oh, yes.
I saw a few seasons of American Horror Story years ago, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to watch this again because I'm kind of in the mood for like a horror, you know, based show. And after just watching Haunting of Hill House, trying to watch American Horror Story, I was kind of let down. I was like, yeah, this isn't, you know, I want another Haunting of Hill House, just a little, you know, just give me something
different. I
actually
just finished watching the Haunting of Hill House, and I got to tell you, it was amazing. Episode 5, though, the bent neck lady.
Oh, my
God.
That
was such emotional kick in the balls. I was dreaming about that later at night. That was just so painful and hard.
The twist on that was just as I said before, it was beautifully written. The acting was spot on, and it took me a while to realize that the older guy was actually the kid from E.T. It was so incredible. The sets were, everything was just brilliant. It just worked, and I really enjoyed that.
We're living in a golden television right now.
Yeah.
There's just so many wonderful shows out right now.
Yes, there are. I tend to stockpile them on my DVR and whatnot, and finally get around to what tends to happen is, so this time of year you keep them on the DVR, and then when summer comes around and they put all the crap out, then you've got some good stuff to watch.
I still have to try Stranger Things. I haven't seen that.
To watch Stranger Things. You have to. it's brilliant.
Okay.
It is. Stranger Things actually got my daughter interested in playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Wow. Yeah.
It's so back to games.
Mm-hmm. We've gone. I was waiting for Xenia to say something witty. I should have known better. Really,
you're doing the robot thing, James. No, I was coughing. I had a cough. No, I have to watch it. I don't really know too much of what it's. I have no idea, no frame or reference, because I haven't seen any of the shows. But and then there's another like I don't know if it's another scary-ish or something. Oh, gosh. No, it just escaped me. Black something. Black Mirror, maybe? Is that what it's called? Or
oh,
something?
Black Mirror, yes. It's all about technology and the dangers of technology and how we're losing ourselves to technology. Each episode is unique. It's going to help. It's quite good. British. The
British
has wonderful television.
I did watch one episode, and it was the one where I think they put, like, the mother's whatever into, like, this little stuffed monkey or something. That was really super creepy. So, yeah, it kind of reminded me of, like, maybe a kind of like a Twilight Zone or something, you know, like something that they would do.
Yeah, a lot of people are drawing that comparison.
Yeah, so... I think I should watch more of that, although I get creeped out really easy, and yeah, maybe I'm a wuss or something, I don't know. But, yeah, no, when we were talking about the Haunting of Hill House, I could not help but think of the one episode where the sisters are in the car, and they're arguing, and then, you know, of course, I lost it. I mean, because normally when you're watching, you know, a horror movie or something, you know, you have the build up, you have the music, and you just know something's going to happen, so you're on edge. And no clue. I had no clue. I mean, that just came out of nowhere and scared the crap out of me. I screamed, and it was great. I mean, you know, I love the jump scares. I do. And that was just great.
I'm not normally a fan of jump scares because I think they're often done poorly, and I think they're thrown in there because the writers don't know how to write something scary, which is why you see them in all these slasher movies. But I must admit that the jump scares in The Haunting of Hill House were pretty bang on. You know, they were good.
I hate to say it, but I think we're just about out of time for our show. You have to promise to come back and see us, and we'll do more talking of scary movies and shows.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, and tell us real quick where we can find you online.
So you can find me at William Stacey Author, and you can find me at Facebook, also as William Stacey Author. Occasionally I'm on Twitter, but not that much.
Sounds like me. Okay, I will get your links put up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk you, they can go there and do it. And again, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, and I will be stalking you to get you to come back and see us. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
This is the time of the show where time of the night when James would tell me to say goodnight, Xtina. So goodnight, Xtina.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Everybody! Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jing, jing. jing, jingle in the evening, jing, jing, jingle in the morning, jingle.